This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
On the afternoon of October 28, 2008, 36-year-old Corey Anderson, a beloved mother of three, left her job at a Jamestown, New York library and visited her fiancé at a nearby car dealership. She told him she planned to head home before picking up her son from school later that day, but Corey never arrived and her family quickly grew concerned. When they went to check on her, Corey's house was empty. Inside, they found fresh groceries and one of her shoes on the stairs, but both Corey and her van were missing. 2 days later, her van was found abandoned in a field near a wooded area close to her home. Despite extensive searches, Corey was never found, leaving her family without answers. It's been just over 16 years since Corey disappeared, and investigators are still searching for her. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, we're going to be talking about Corey Anderson tonight. As I mentioned, 16 years have passed since this case took place. And as we get into it, the possibilities as far as what went down are limited. The who is a little bit more expansive, even though it may appear that one person is at the top of the list. And this is another case where we're going to be talking about an ex-spouse, and I know we've covered a couple of those the last few weeks, so we'll be switching it up the next week, and I don't want people to think we're only going to do one type of case, but they're all important and they all deserve exposure and coverage, so I'm just trying to do as much as I can with what I have. And speaking of doing what I can, I'll make this quick. I just got back from Crime Cruise literally yesterday, and while we were out there, we had the opportunity to do a crowd solve. We covered the Robin Pope case, which I featured on Breaking Homicide, and to get together and go over the investigation and the intricacies and nuances of the investigative process, it was a lot of fun for me to see you guys in person and to basically do what I do here on Detective Perspective, but live. So thank you to everyone who attended. And thank you for all the kind words from everybody after the show who came up and said, hey, I listen or watch Detective Perspective, and I really enjoy what you do, but more importantly, appreciate the fact that you're taking the time to cover these cases and to give a voice to the voiceless. So it inspires me to come back here and to continue doing this. This is why I was pumped to get right back into the studio and talk about another case. So as much as you guys may be getting out of what I'm putting out, I'm getting as much in the responses from you, whether it's in the comments or on the rare occasion in person. And I strongly recommend, if you ever have the chance to attend a Crime Con, whether it's the Crime Con cruise or the actual Crime Con event, check it out. I do not think you'll be disappointed. But thank you for hearing me out on that little spiel. I know some of you get aggravated when I take more than a couple minutes in the intro, so let's not waste any more time. Let's dive into this week's case. Corey Lynn Baker was born on April 4th, 1972, to her mother, Vicky. Now, we don't know much about Corey's early years, except that she grew up on a dairy farm in Western New York. Then in 1990, at the age of 18, Corey married her first husband and soon became the mother of two daughters, Caitlin and Shannon. But despite Corey's best efforts, the marriage didn't last. After 7 years, the couple divorced, and Corey moved back in with her mother and stepfather, bringing her daughters with her. A few years later, in 2000, Corey met Ken Anderson online. According to Crime Watch Daily, it didn't matter to Corey that Ken said that he had already been married and divorced 4 times. She fell for him right away. Within months, the two were married, and by their first anniversary, they welcomed a son, Zachary, into their lives. Now, from the outside, things appeared to be good in the Anderson household, but that wasn't the reality. Ken allegedly had a violent temper, and he was physically abusive toward Corey. Although it wasn't the ideal situation, Corey stayed with Ken, hoping to make things work for their son. But then one day while going through Ken's papers, Corey discovered something unexpected. Ken was never legally divorced from his fourth wife. That meant that legally, Ken was a bigamist, and his marriage to Corey was invalid. Corey decided to reach out to Ken's first wife, Stephanie, hoping for some insight. Stephanie told Corey that she married Ken when she was just 16 and pregnant with their first child. They'd go on to have 3 more children during their 12-year marriage. According to Crime Watch Daily, Stephanie didn't hold back when speaking to Corey. She shared horror stories about her life when she was with Ken. She told Corey that he'd padlocked the doors before he left for work, essentially keeping her captive in her own home. He would also physically assault her, and once, he even threatened to kill her. Stephanie said that she was so afraid she eventually took her children and left him, and that Corey could still do the same. Stephanie even suggested that Corey report Ken's bigamy, hoping it might lead to some jail time, giving Corey the opportunity to get away. After speaking with Stephanie, Corey did decide to take her kids, and she left Ken. She tried to move on, but Ken was unwilling to let her go. He started getting involved more, even going to Corey's church, and for a while, she thought things might be changing. Eventually, Corey agreed to go to counseling with him, hoping they could work things out, and for a time, things seemed to be improving, and by early 2005, they moved into a new home on Wellman Road in Asheville, New York. But according to FindCorey.com, it soon became clear that the same problems in their relationship hadn't disappeared. Corey decided to end things for good, and Ken moved out. She and the kids stayed in the home on Wellman Road, and she filed for divorce. To support herself, Corey worked from home as a medical transcriptionist. She also picked up a part-time job as a technical assistant at the library located at Jamestown Community College. So as you can see, at this point, things appear to be going relatively well. Ken moved out, Corey has the house on Wellman Road with her kids, and she's already finding ways to be self-sufficient and not reliant on Ken's financial contributions. So at this point, she's probably thinking, okay, you know, I've heard some bad things about Ken, but he's moved on, I've moved on, things are going to be okay. Unfortunately, that was not the case, and things are going to take a turn. We're going to take our first break. We'll be right back.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
All right, we're back from break. And as I just mentioned, Corey was over the relationship. She had moved on and she made it very clear that the relationship was over. But unfortunately, Ken wouldn't leave her alone. And according to Crime Watch Daily, his behavior escalated pretty quickly and it even included levels of stalking. And at one point, he attached a GPS device under her vehicle. And it's always terrible to hear these stories. And unfortunately, it's super easy to do. Now, I don't want to go into too many specifics, but we used GPS trackers a lot when I was undercover, and they're accessible online. People can buy them, and basically they're just magnetized. So readily available. Anybody who has some type of malicious intention can get them without any type of questioning, and you don't really need any type of training to install them. So unfortunate situation, and this is definitely not the first time I've heard something like this. Now, when Corey found out that this was going on, she went straight to the police. They issued a protective order for her and her children, and Ken was arrested for placing the GPS on her car. 2 weeks later, he was arrested again for violating that court order. Here's another tragic situation. The good news is the police were active. They took her report seriously. I can tell you again firsthand, from different encounters that I've had, depending on the jurisdiction you're in, that is not always the case, but they were proactive and I respect that. So they arrest him. But unfortunately, these protective orders, they're difficult. They're difficult because you have to serve them at first. And even after you serve them, even if they're arrested, they're usually just released again. It usually takes 3, 4, maybe even 5 times for a judge to say, you know what, you're not getting it. You're in contempt of court. I'm going to hold you for the weekend or I'm going to hold you for 10 days. And by that point, if it's a serious situation, this offender may know that that's coming and decide to do something much more extreme before they're arrested again. So that's the downfall here. Yes, there's avenues that victims can explore, but the judicial system is very apprehensive about taking more significant actions against those offenders so that they're not able to reoffend. They really have to see a pattern of behavior that shows a disregard for the courts before they do anything. So it's a good thing that we have something, but there has to be improvements. There has to be changes. I've seen too many situations where a victim has reported being stalked or being abused. There is a protective order filed. The offender violates that protective order multiple times. And before something's actually done, we can have a bad situation become a lot worse. And I've personally experienced it. I arrived at a house one day while I was still in patrol. It was between a man and woman. They were staying at a halfway house. There was a verbal argument. We sent the gentleman on his way. There was no complaint. And I advised him not to come back, even though legally he lived there. I couldn't tell him to do so, but he agreed. And we came back the next day. And we separated him. We got him to a different location. I wasn't there on the second call. But then on the third call, officers arrived later that evening. And when they showed up, the gentleman, I shouldn't even call him a gentleman, the monster, was sitting on the stairs smoking a cigarette. And they asked where his girlfriend was because now we were aware of the situation. He hadn't committed any crimes yet. We did as much as we could within the realm of our what control we did have, what authority we could impose on him. And we asked where his wife was or his girlfriend was. And he responded by saying, oh, don't worry about her. I already killed her. And he wasn't lying. He had killed her up in the halfway house upstairs, and he actually made a nurse sit in the room and watch while he did it. So an absolutely horrific situation. We lost an amazing person, and there was another victim in this case, the nurse, who will never be the same. And this monster is in jail now for the rest of his life, but at this point, the damage has already been done. So domestic violence, stalking, these cases are severe, and I really hope that in general, we start to implement some more severe penalties for these types of crimes, because right now, it's essentially a slap on the wrist. But back to Ken, because that's what we're talking about right now. And as I mentioned, he was arrested. And after these arrests, fortunately, something was done. He was placed on probation, and it seemed to serve as a deterrent for at least a little while. So Corey continued on with her life. And by early 2008, she started dating someone new, a guy by the name of Mike Samuelson. But even moving on with this new life, Corey was still afraid of Ken, and she shared her concerns with her friends and family, telling them that she was worried he might try to hurt her. In July of 2008, Corey sent an email to a relative outlining some of her fears. According to the Huffington Post, she wrote in part, quote, "Things with Ken have not fully resolved and probably never will. I have come to the conclusion that he is a psycho and thrives off trying to make others feel like they are insane. I would like to get the property all worked out and just move on as much as possible. I feel like he is dragging his feet with that because of a control issue." By the fall of 2008, Corey and Ken's divorce was nearly finalized. Corey and her boyfriend Mike were engaged, and they were looking to get married the following year. But before any of that could happen, 36-year-old Corey went missing. On the morning of October 28th, Corey went to her part-time job at the library in Jamestown. Then at around 1 p.m., she stopped by the Lake County Dodge dealership to see Mike. She stayed for approximately 15 minutes, telling him she was heading home for a short time before going to pick up her son Zach at school at 3:15. Now, in addition to picking up her son, Corey was also a room mother and had a meeting scheduled with her son's teacher for that day to finalize plans for an upcoming Halloween party. But Corey never made it to the meeting, and she never picked up her son. Now, this was completely out of character for her, and when her family couldn't reach her, they immediately went to her house to see if everything was okay. According to WGRZ, when they arrived, both Corey and her dark blue 2005 Dodge Caravan were gone. Inside the house, they found signs that she had been at the home after leaving the dealership. There were new groceries, and one of her shoes that she had been wearing was on the stairs. But the other shoe was missing, along with her keys and her purse. At this point, Corey's mother, Vicky, feared the worst, so she reported Corey missing, and given her history with Ken, the police quickly put out an APB on Corey's van. They also reached out to the New York State Police for support as well. Corey's family and law enforcement began searching for her immediately. And according to Buffalo News, many of the searches focused on a wooded area across the street from Corey's house. She lived across the street from Wellman State Forest, which was a 447-acre state park. So it's all hands on deck. Everybody's searching for Corey. And on October 30th, just 2 days after Corey was reported missing, a hunter found her van abandoned in a large field off Nortwright Road. Now, it's important to note that the van wasn't visible from the road, and it was parked very close to the Wellman State Forest line. And as far as where the van was located in this field, and relative to Corey's house, it would be about a 2-mile drive. However, it was only about a 0.5-mile walk if you went through the woods. So I think that piece of information is critical as we continue on with this case and you start to think about different theories and we eventually dive into the perspective at the end. Another piece of information that I thought was pretty interesting was after this hunter found this van, he contacted the property owner and the property owner came out and he immediately recognized the vehicle as Corey's. Now, why is that? Well, he actually knew Ken personally. And the reason he knew him personally was because he had allowed him to hunt on his property in previous years. So Ken knew this area relatively well. So the landowner immediately called the police and mentioned that he hadn't noticed anything unusual in the days leading up to the discovery. The state police responded to the scene and towed Corey's van back to the station for forensic analysis. They also combed the area for any additional evidence. And as I sit here right now, it's unclear if anything was found at that time. That night, the police questioned Ken for hours. They also conducted a search of his home, though the details of the questioning and the search have never been released. Following Ken's interview, the authorities stopped short of naming him a person of interest or a suspect. When asked if foul play was involved, the district attorney said, quote, "Well, we can't rule it out. So I think from my perspective, we treat it as though there has been foul play." On Friday, November 14th, Corey's family made a public request asking hunters heading out that weekend to keep an eye out for her. According to the Buffalo News, it had snowed twice since Corey's disappearance, but the snow had melted, which they hoped might reveal something new. But Corey wasn't located, and as far as I know, there was nothing significant recovered, and if it was, it was never made public. Now, after November, coverage in Corey's case slowed down. The search for Corey continued, but as months turned into years, there was no sign of her. And for a long time, there had been no developments. That is until the spring of 2016, when New York police received a tip that led them back to the area where Corey's van had been found. Using metal detectors, officers searched the site and uncovered two significant items: Corey's keys and her missing shoe. But her purse, a black shoulder bag with a G.H. Bass & Company logo, clothes, and glasses were still missing. When I was doing some research for this case and looking at Haley's notes, the question was posed, why didn't they use metal detectors originally? And I don't have a good answer for it. I will say that this is why we continue to cover cases. You know, as human beings, investigators are not perfect. And it could have just slipped through the cracks where it was much later when maybe this new tip came in that someone within the department said, hey, you know what? Has anyone tried to use a metal detector out there to see if maybe we can find a murder weapon or we can find some more of her items? And they might have said, okay, yeah, let's try it. So yes, I would have liked to see them use it originally. I will tell you that in my experience for a crime scene, although we haven't had many crime scenes that were out in the middle of the woods, we've never used a metal detector. So I'm not going to sit here and Monday morning quarterback. I will say now, having that information, it is a pretty damn good idea. And any investigations I have in the future where I'm out in the field, this will be a tool that I consider. We still have more to go in this story. We're going to be talking about our friend Ken again. Let's just say this wasn't his last run-in with the law. But before we do, let's take our last break and we'll be right back.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
All right, we're back, and as I mentioned before break, Ken just couldn't stay out of trouble. In November of 2016, he was arrested at a Days Inn in Richmond, Kentucky, on charges of kidnapping, rape, and unlawful imprisonment. The victim was his estranged sixth wife, who had a restraining order against him. According to the Huffington Post, she had reported that Ken was, quote, extremely controlling and had a history of assaulting her. Police found Ken and his estranged wife at the hotel after she was reported missing from New York. Sound familiar? Now, once she was rescued, she told officers that Ken had kidnapped her from Jamestown, New York, and had taken her to Richmond, Kentucky. Once there, he held her against her will, raped her, and even threatened to kill her if she tried to escape. Following Ken's arrest, Corey's mother told the Huffington Post, quote, "Maybe this will be the beginning of the end." Corey's sister also spoke to Spectrum News One, saying, quote, "I'm happy that he's in jail, that he can't hurt anybody else. I feel awful for the woman that this has happened to. However, on the other side, he's not in there because of Corey. So that bothers me. I mean, I'm glad that he's in there, but it's in like a way that he's still getting away with it." Corey's family was convinced that Ken was involved in her disappearance and likely her murder. But when it came to law enforcement, their opinion depended on which state you asked. Police in Kentucky said that New York authorities had told them that Ken was their suspect in Corey's case and that they believed Corey was dead. Meanwhile, New York police said otherwise. They stated Ken wasn't a suspect or even a person of interest. They claimed it was, quote, "too early to determine if he played a role in Corey's disappearance." And without key evidence, namely a body, state police wouldn't officially rule her disappearance as a death. The New York police added, quote, "We are continually investigating this over the last 8 years, so we're just going to take this information and now thoroughly go through everything to see if this does breathe new life or add anything to our case." Now, here's the part that's really going to piss you off, because I know it pissed me off. Ultimately, the kidnapping case that Ken was involved in, he took a plea deal, admitting guilt to unlawful imprisonment. He was sentenced to only 12 months in prison. After that, he was a free man. Gotta love our justice system. This man raped and kidnapped this woman, threatened to kill her if she tried to escape, and yet he did a year in prison, and he's out there with the possibility of reoffending again. This is a classic one of those cases where the writing is on the wall, and there's going to be something that happens where he does it again, and maybe he does kill his victim, and we're going to be looking back at this going, how did this happen? It's unbelievable. Just don't get it. And I could talk about this for hours. What I will say is we have to learn from these stories, and we have to consider historical data and the potential to reoffend. And I think what we would find is a pattern where individuals are committing crimes like this, more than likely, if given the opportunity, they'll do it again. So knowing that, I think that judges have to start considering the potential to hurt someone else and continue to be a danger to the community when deciding on a sentence. And I don't care if the prosecution and the defense come together and want to offer this plea deal. As the judge, they should sit back and go, you know what? I'm not accepting it. Go back, do better, more time, and then maybe I'll approve it. I know it's a stretch, and I know some of you are going to be in the comments coming for me, but I have to use my platform to say it. It's a small voice, but regardless of what happens, I feel better about at least saying it out loud because it's absolutely ridiculous. But I digress. Let's get back to why we're here, Corey's case. In 2019, the New York State Police provided an update on Corey's case to WGRZ. They said that Corey's case was still an active investigation and they continued to conduct searches. They also are using new DNA technology to test evidence collected from Corey's home and the van. And I'm assuming that those items that are being tested, it's going to be the shoes, it's going to be the keys, it's going to be the interior of the van, because more than likely the offender was driving that van to the crime scene. And if there's one thing we know, DNA has come a long way. So if the items collected were preserved correctly, even if it was a small amount of DNA that could not be analyzed then, with the technology we have today, it is very possible that they may find something that could connect someone we're already aware of or someone who hasn't been discovered yet. As far as Ken's concerned, we can talk about that more in the perspective, because I do think there's going to be some issues even if Ken's DNA is recovered from one of the items. Now, the next major update came in September of 2021, when two sets of remains were found in the same county where Corey had disappeared, and many wondered if one of those sets could belong to Corey. Corey's family spoke to the Post Journal and shared that they were hopeful the remains would finally bring them answers. Her mother, Vicky, said she thinks about Corey every day. She said, quote, "It's hard not knowing what happened to her, it is. But we've learned to go on. She hasn't gone far from our thoughts. You just get to a point where you have to move on. And I understand that. Some may say, like, oh, you know, how could you say that? I don't think many of you will. I think most of you will understand. But I do think once you've exhausted all resources, once you've done everything you could, you have to find a way to continue to live, not only for yourself, but for your loved one that's no longer there. And so I completely understand where Vicky's coming from. And I would hope that if I were in her situation, God forbid, that I would have the strength to do the same. It's definitely something, as she mentioned, you never forget about Corey. You think about her every day, but you can't dwell on it because it's not good for you or anyone else you care about. Unfortunately, testing confirmed that neither set of remains belonged to Corey. Now, there was one good thing that came out of this, one little piece of information. Following this news that neither set belonged to Corey, a detective working on Corey's case told Spectrum News One that Ken was a person of interest in Corey's disappearance. And I'm sure most of us already assume this, but it's good to hear it publicly. He further revealed that multiple agencies were coming together to form an unsolved crime division that would take over Corey's case, which I love. I've talked about it before. Clearly, the New York State Police, they've done everything they can, and the people that are able to work this case within that organization have more than likely looked at it, and it hasn't led anywhere. It's now a time to bring in other officers, other investigators, to look at it with a fresh perspective without any type of preconceived notions, start from square one, and see if they see anything that someone else missed. Or maybe they decide to go in a different direction. Or maybe they suggest something that hasn't been done yet. There's nothing to lose, everything to gain. Bring them in, let them look at the case. So that's all good. That's positive news. But there was an update in 2023 when the state police provided an update to our friends over at the Moms and Mysteries podcast. The lead detective explained that they were no longer commenting on suspects or persons of interest in any of their cases, including Corey's. However, the detective made it clear that he had not ruled out anyone, including Ken. Now, some of you may be asking, why the back and forth? 1 minute they're saying Ken's a person of interest, then they're saying there's no persons of interest. Kentucky officers are saying New York said one thing, New York State Police are saying something else. Then they're saying we're doing this cold case unit and Ken's going to be on that list. And then they're finally coming out and saying we're not talking about it anymore. What this is a changing of guard. I've seen it before and I'll see it again. Different leaders, different administrators have different schools of thought. Some think that we should involve the community. Some think that there should be transparency. Others think that no one's entitled to know anything and it can only hurt the case. I've told you guys before, if it's a newer case, keep it in-house. But as time progresses, you need to share more information, specifically to the families. They have the right to know. But this to me just shows that you have different people in charge over a period of time and they all have different opinions on the approach when it comes to suspects and persons of interest. Clearly, the most recent leader feels none of it should be out there, and this detective is just the guy who was picked to relay that information. So I'm not going to kill the messenger. But that's really what's going on here. It's a lack of communication amongst different administrations as, you know, through attrition, people decide to leave. New people come in charge, and they say, you know what? I don't care what was done before. This is what we're doing now. That's all this is. I can almost guarantee it. Now let's fast forward to October 28th, 2024, which marked the 16th year since Corey's disappearance. Now this is only a few weeks ago. On that day, volunteers gathered to search the woods near where Corey's van had been discovered. Now, as far as I know, they didn't find anything, but that's not what's important. What's important is that 16 years later, there's people still out there searching those woods, regardless of how unlikely it might be that they're going to find anything. And to me, that says everything. It says everything about those people and that community. And I'm really happy to hear that there's still people fighting for Corey, regardless of how much time has passed. Now, as inspirational as that is, sadly, it's the last update we have in Corey's case. She is still missing, and her family is still desperate for answers.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Okay, let's dive into this perspective and continue talking about some of the things I was talking about in the episode. Where are we in this case right now? What do we have? Where can we go from here? Well, there's a few things. First off, it would be great to find Corey. If she is in fact deceased, it may be hard to find her body. Yes, she could be in that state park, 447 square miles. It's going to be hard to find her after all these years. Or if somehow Ken is involved, we've already seen his MO, right? He could have taken her to another state. We may never find her. I'll say this, in a homicide case, it's great to have a body, but it's not absolutely necessary. So if other things come to fruition and are revealed through science, technology, a confession, a statement, whatever it might be, absent of a body, that doesn't mean prosecution can't go forward. So just know we're not contingent on finding Corey if she's no longer alive. If we have something else that's compelling, we can still go forward with a case and attempt to prosecute someone. As far as those other things that may assist in closing this case, either one, it's going to be a confession where someone comes forward and says, yeah, I did it. Or, as I mentioned, DNA. There are items that were recovered, and if those items are forensically analyzed appropriately, there could be a DNA sequence that's recovered from them, and it could be connected to someone, either someone in her life or someone who pops in CODIS, which we know is the DNA database that's national. And you think about people it could come back to. Well, first off, I would say Ken. I think we would all say Ken. Then you have Mike, the boyfriend, the fiance, I should say. However, it does appear that he was at the car dealership at the time of Corey's disappearance, so he's officially ruled out. And then there's that random person. You always have to throw that qualifier out there. Could there have been someone that we were unfamiliar with in Corey's life, or maybe even someone who saw her at the grocery store or was in the neighborhood, and as she was bringing the groceries into the house, maybe she wasn't paying attention, and they attacked her. What's my problem with that theory? Because I'm sure some of you are going to say, oh, you know what? That is possible. The problem is, how did they get there? Did they just walk up? And if they did, okay, they attack her, they subdue her, they put her in her own vehicle, and they drive out to the woods. What now? Where do they go from there? They would have had to have had a car standing by, a means of transportation. So this would have been premeditated. So the idea that this person was just walking through the grocery store and followed her home doesn't really compute, because that means their vehicle would have been at her property as well. And if the person was driving by or walking by and they ran into her house, again, their vehicle would be on her property. No, this was planned. Where her vehicle was found would suggest that the perpetrator attacked her, transported her in her own vehicle out into the woods, and then from that point, transferred her to the suspect vehicle and fled the area. That's what it says to me. I don't know another plausible scenario that would make a ton of sense, unless this was some type of collaborative effort amongst multiple suspects, and I'm just not seeing it. As far as what we have at the main crime scene and then the secondary crime scene involving the van, at the main crime scene, you have the shoe. The shoe suggests some type of struggle. Maybe she was being dragged out of the house. Clearly, she had the other shoe on her. It was found at the secondary crime scene. So it could have been something where either the suspect was someone who was known to her and she interacted with them for a short period of time and it went south, or this was a random individual who walked in and before she could get away, they got a hold of her. Whatever the case, I think she was either killed or rendered unconscious inside the house. She was then bound and transported in the van to the secondary crime scene. Once at the secondary crime scene, during the transfer from one vehicle to the other, that's where the keys and the shoes come off and end up in the woods somewhere, which they would eventually be found by the metal detectors. Let's talk about these items quickly. I mentioned Ken earlier in the episode. Let's just say, for the sake of this conversation, the DNA on the shoes or the keys, if there is any, comes back to Ken. Do I think a case could still be made against him, especially with the duration and time that's gone on since they've been together? Absolutely. That even becomes more apparent if the shoes were not something that she owned when she was with Ken. I hope that's the case. And then you may have DNA inside the house. I don't know what was swabbed at the time. You couldn't do it now. But if there were other items inside the property, the countertops, the stairs, the doorknob, things of that nature, that is something where maybe you could say that if it belonged to Ken, it could incriminate him. But that's where I push back, because we know that house, Ken lived there at one point. So when it comes to DNA, his defense team is going to say, of course his DNA is there. He lived there. And of course his DNA was on the keys or on her shoes. It was inside a house that he resided at one point. And that's going to be a defense that the prosecution would have to overcome if the DNA came back to Ken. Now, if it comes back to some other person that is not directly connected to Corey or had no legal right or any business being on her property or in possession of her shoes or keys, then they're screwed. They got a major issue, and that more than likely is our person. I do want to explore one other scenario before we wrap up this episode, and I'm going to make it quick because I don't believe in it, but I'm not here to send you down one road. I want to give you all roads and allow you to make your own decision. So something else that could be considered, again, I don't personally believe in it. If there's more going on in Corey's life that we're unaware of, could she have staged her own disappearance? Could she have pulled like a Gone Girl, where she is at the house, she sets this all up, drives out to this location, leaves a shoe behind, has a secondary car waiting for her, or maybe another person in her life that she's going to take off with that we haven't identified yet? That's a scenario. Don't believe it. Doesn't align with what we know. She was engaged, about to get married, but I throw it out there because someone in the comments may. Yes, it's a theory, but I think that's where it ends, as a theory that has no credibility to it. But I throw it out there. I pose it to you so that you can consume it and do what you want with it. Spoiler alert, don't waste too much time on it. It's going nowhere. The only other thing that I wanted to cover in this perspective was Corey's current condition. Do I believe she's alive or is she dead? I would say more than likely when she left that house, she was alive. I believe that because if she was dead, whether it was intentional or accidental, why would the suspect take her from the home? Why would they risk that? The only reason you would transport her from that home in her vehicle to the secondary crime scene was if she was still alive. And by doing that, I believe she was still alive when she left that house. As far as today, I'm going to treat this as a missing person case. But if Ken was somehow involved, more than likely she's no longer with us. And I think her family has come to that conclusion as well. If it's someone else, I think the potential that she could still be alive is slightly higher, although still not very likely. It's been 16 years. But we're going to hold out hope. Stranger things have happened. Until we know for certain that she is no longer alive, we're going to keep it open as a possibility. That's what we do. So that's where we find ourselves in this case. It's going to be solved through a confession, through DNA, or from someone coming forward who hasn't spoken to police yet and has critical information that can tie this whole thing together. And that's why, as always, we're going to end it with a recap. Corey Lynn Anderson was last seen at 1:15 p.m. on October 28, 2008, as she left the Lake County Dodge dealership in Jamestown, New York. She was supposed to go to her son's school by 3:15 p.m., but she never arrived. When her family checked her home on Wellman Road, they found signs that she had briefly returned after visiting the dealership, but Corey was gone. 2 days later, on October 30th, her Dodge Caravan was discovered abandoned in a field near Wellman State Forest, about a half-mile walk through the woods from her home. Years later, her car keys and missing shoe would be found in the same field. However, Corey herself is still missing. When Corey went missing, she was 36 years old. She was approximately 5 foot 11 inches tall and weighed approximately 170 pounds, and she also had chin-length blonde hair. She also has green eyes, and the last time she was seen, she was wearing black corduroy pants, a black leather jacket, and small wire-rimmed glasses. Anyone with information regarding Corey's case is asked to call the New York State Police at 716-665-3113. If you would like to support the search for Corey, you can join the Facebook group, Help Find Corey Anderson. As always, my final words go out to Corey's friends and family, specifically her children, Kathy, Shannon, and Zach. While doing research for this case, I stumbled upon some photos of them with Corey, beautiful children, and now they're left without their mother and not even knowing what happened to her or who's responsible. And I can't imagine what that's like, but I hope if they hear or listen to this episode, they feel like I did it justice. And I want them to know that myself and everybody who supports this show and me, we now have your back and we're here for the long haul. And if there's anything we can do to help, we will be there to support you. I know that I'm not the first podcast to cover this case, and I hope that I'm not the last. And I really hope that in the near future, there's an update in this investigation, and I'm able to come back to this table right here and fill you guys in and give you some positive news. But until that day comes, that's going to do it for me. Everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.